Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Michael Steele. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. You know it is always a trip for me when we get together because y'all get to spend time with me, and I love that. I'm so glad you could be a part of the conversation. Well, we are now well over, 10 days into the new administration. We've got a feel-good vibe going on out there. We're talking unity, and all is right with the world, and then all of a sudden, up pops Marjorie Greene, Marjorie Taylor Greene and her bullshit. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into whatever the hell Matt Gaetz did out in Wyoming this week. There's a lot to get into. But before I do, I just want to remind you, do that download thing. You know how you make me feel when you download and show that love. You can find me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast on. Do it. Well, there's only one person who could dissect what we are now kind of into right now. I was just talking to my buddy before we came on about how he like clears the path. He clears the bullshit and gets right to the nub. None other than the incomparable Rick the Man Wilson.
Michael Steele, how are you, brother?
Hey, brother, you know I'm good because you're here. Come on,
man. All right. All right, let's make the magic.
I am good because you are here. So let's start with the easy stuff here. Biden has now been in space as president for well over a week. Yeah. I thought it was a little bit unreasonable for folks like when, you know, three days into the job, they're like, oh, what have you done on COVID? I'm like,
hey. Why haven't you cured it?
Yeah, why haven't you solved that problem? But he's kind of laid out a map, which we never had before. He's moved it out of the Rose Garden of the White House and put Fauci in charge and let his folks, his coronavirus team, do their thing. What's your assessment of this transition within the transition of this administration to try to reset the course here?
Well, you know, first off, it's boring. And I love that. You know, it's a steady administration. They're not out there screaming at reporters about the size of their crowd or going off in, you know, all these crazy tangents.
Right.
And look, Biden is doing the nuts and bolts work he promised to do. He's doing some executive order stuff, which, you know, between you and me, I think is sort of it's sort of giving his progressive wing some things to brag about.
Right.
While he prepares for a lot of really tough negotiation going forward, because, you know, you and I both know that he's got 12 to 14 months to get COVID in hand and to show people he's got a forward-looking plan on it before the mood turns.
Yeah, because otherwise they get killed in the congressional elections next year.
That's it. Right now he's got a good amount of faith that he's doing a real plan on COVID, that he's listening to scientists and doctors, that he's got his shit together, and it isn't like, you know, the hydrochloroquine show one day and putting sunlight up your ass another day. You know, so I think those things are all benefiting him right now, and he's going to have a lot of work to do, and this is going to focus on COVID. It really is going to be the determinant of what this administration looks like a year from now and 3 years from now, or 4 years from now when the elections roll up again. It's going to be, his legacy will be, did he get it under control or not?
How do you, on that point, because I think folks really need to understand exactly what the dynamics of this dance will look like, because Republicans have been emboldened for the simple reason that they got a 50 seat, you know, edge. Biden's going to need some votes from his side to get some of this done. How much do you think they're going to be willing to play?
Well, look, I mean, Mitch McConnell has a narrow path to walk. On the one hand, there are going to be a lot of voters, including Republicans, who want COVID relief.
Or they want something done.
Who want something done about this, and who don't want to see Mitch McConnell play filibuster and cloture bullshit games for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the Trump side of the equation wants Mitch McConnell to burn it all to the ground, you know, right, to speed the revolution or whatever the fuck they're doing. and that idea that obstruction is going to be a political winner for them, I think is a very, very bad bet.
See, I agree with that, Rick, and I can't get anyone else to buy that. So you and I are like the cheese in the corner here, you know, right, standing alone on this, because I said on MSNBC last week, what the hell is the problem, Democrats? You've got the advantage here. I mean, act like you have the friggin' advantage.
Like, act like winners. Seize the ground.
Yeah.
You own this ground. Seize it. Take it. You won the election. Act like you won. Put a plan out there. Make the Republicans take the painful vote to say, no, I don't want to give people COVID relief.
Right. Exactly. That's not complicated. It really, really isn't.
At all.
And so, but the, you know, I sit there and I listen to some of these guys and I'm scratching my head. I'm like, would you stop the bitch ass whining?
Right.
And just go and just call McConnell's bluff. They say, oh, so you so worried about the filibuster? That's the least of your worries. Let me tell you.
You got a list of other shit about a mile high that you should be worried about.
Right, exactly.
And I think, you know, look, let's be honest. Chuck Schumer is no Mitch McConnell. He is not the kind of maneuvering parliamentary expert that works behind the scenes the way McConnell can work. And whether you love Mitch McConnell or hate Mitch McConnell, he is a master of Senate process. People should know this. They should get it.
Yep.
And the only way you put him in a box is to also get Joe Biden to use his relationships with a lot of these guys. And he's known them all for 40 years or more in some cases, or 30 years or more in some cases, to start making side deals away from McConnell.
Go to
Murkowski. Go to Romney. Get a wing put together. You only need two or three to totally fuck up McConnell's math, and it gets a lot easier.
And so I like to look at it as a pincer move, because while you do that on the one hand, the next hand is use the damn process against the master of the process.
Correct.
Because that's the least the thing they expect you to do. I have Democrats all the time ask me, so how did you beat us in 2010? I just ran like a Democrat. I just ran every campaign across the country the way you would run it.
Yep.
I turned out my vote.
Right. Whip up the vote. I mean, it's the most 101 of this operation. But you know, it just goes to show you, Michael, how much the party's changed since we were sort of in that flow.
Yeah.
And you look at a person like Marjorie Taylor Greene, I guarantee you, Denny Hastert may have been a dipshit, but he would have put Marjorie Taylor Greene out to pasture day one. John Boehner, day one. Even
he
Newt Gingrich
would have let her in the building.
Right. Even Newt Gingrich back in the day would have gone, whoa, too much, crazy lady. You're out. You know, or she'd be put on the Capitol Buildings and Grounds Committee. You would not put her on the Education Committee because she's a fucking lunatic, believes in the space lasers and George Soros was that Sandy Hook was a false flag and all this other. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah. And that's their Achilles heel at this point in this whole drama is they don't get how much of a noose around the neck she, Matt Gaetz, all those guys are. Yep, Boebert, all of them.
Paul Gosar,
yep,
that guy. You know, Gosar kills me because it's like if you've got seven brothers and sisters, they're all adults and they all hate you and voted for the other person. It really says something.
It kind of tells you
how's that family dinner going to go.
I was going to say, it kind of tells you what Thanksgivings are like. You know, it just
Hey, Paul, pass the go fuck yourself.
I know it is kind of. The dynamics are very clear on so many levels. And you know, guys like us, we see it. We've been in this space. We've been in those trenches, yeah. And we know. Trying to get and I know this as a former chairman, just trying to get the damn organs to move in the right way. I mean, the resistance I got for doing the simple basic stuff during the 2010 cycle, I see it now playing out again for the Democrats. How does Biden, because I think you make an essential point about his relationships with a lot of Republicans on the Hill. Relationships, quite frankly, he's also going to have to utilize with some Democrats on the Hill because they just batshit crazy too in some respects and don't get the opportunity in front of them. How can he play a role in shaping those organs and moving them to his will, if you will, the way we saw a Reagan do at a critical moment, or even especially a Bill Clinton, who was able to lift the mighty boulder on welfare reform and right. balancing the budget, because that required, you know, his left flank buying into something that they ordinarily wouldn't buy into, and even his right flank going, well, we want to do welfare reform, but not the kind of welfare reform you're proposing. You know, right. So it's how do you How do you think Biden's built for that?
You know, look, I think it could be like a Nixon to China thing.
Mm.
You know, It could be he may be the only person that could pull that off. And the question is going to be, does he have enough traction to convince his progressive base in the left wing of the party
right.
that the political benefits to all Democrats by doing these things will outweigh what they will look at as ideological compromises.
Yeah.
And that to me is that's a window into the reality he faces. And I don't know the answer to that yet, Michael. I mean, look, a lot of it's going to come down to if his polling numbers hold up, and basically he's the flip side of Trump. He's like 55-37 right now.
Right.
He's still on the honeymoon, but if he does the right things on COVID, I think he's got a chance to build a stable set of political equities going forward and not find himself, you know, drawing too many compromises from the left, you know, trying to say, okay, well, I'll give you the Green New Deal if you'll pass the COVID bill.
I can see. Okay, I see that. And so then how then does the executive order, the run-up with the executive orders factor into that? Do you see a diminishment of that sort of energy and that momentum because of the number of executive orders that he's done and the way he's kind of put these out here? I kind of look at it simply that he had to clean out a whole lot of shit that was in the cellar left over from Trump.
For sure.
And the only way he could have done that, well, I'm not going to take some of this stuff to the legislature to try to get them to act on it because right. I got to now deal with all the crazy Trump Republicans in the House. And
look, a lot of it was stuff Trump couldn't do legislatively, so right. he did it by executive order. Trump opened the door for this.
Yes.
You know, if you say, I don't want to even bother to go try to pass a bill on immigration or whatever other issue, and then you do it by executive order and someone else reverses it, you know, that's what that is.
Right. And
that's just the bottom line here. That's you know, you set the rules under Donald Trump. And so Biden's going to play that out. There was a warning. You know, the conservative move for Trump would have been to pass legislation, go to Congress, make compromises, pass things. But right. he wanted to cheat. He wanted to go around the process. He didn't want to do the small D Democratic work of a small R Republican system of government. He wanted to go and cut the corner. Well, now he's been slapped for jaywalking. And Biden can just go, nope.
It's just like, it never happened.
Right. And I'm going to guess like a third of Trump's executive orders were just trolling.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're just fucking with
definitely people. Trolling Obama. Oh, there's no doubt Absolutely. About that.
No doubt.
There was no doubt about that.
And I think with that, you know, you just gotta let that go. You're just like, okay, well, right. Fine. It's out.
Right.
And look, I think, you know, a lot of the environmental stuff, I think this really is, I think he recognizes it's going to be real hard to do gigantic climate change legislation in an economic crisis like we're in now. So he's trying to punch some tickets on that for his base. And I think it's a smart thing to do. I mean, so I don't disagree with all of it, but I think there's a political overlay to it. He's got to do a lot of symbolic stuff now, because when we get into the negotiation in a couple of weeks, it's going to get real ugly.
It's going to get ugly fast. And he's going to find himself sitting there looking at Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer at some points going, whose side are you on again? Right. Wait a minute. Right. You know, right. I'm the president, right? We're the same party, right? Is that's how these things play themselves out. And the country's got to be prepared for this. So I think you're right in terms of how he's doing the run up to that moment, have laid some good tracks, got some high profile executive orders done. So rallied the country around two important themes. One is unity. The second being a response to COVID-19 that's mature, right. Adult, sophisticated. Yep. And the country's like, okay. And it's like how you started the conversation. This is boring. And for Biden, boring could be good in that sense, that people can go back to, oh, I can go pay attention to something else. I can do something else and not sit here fretting for the next 20 minutes whether or not there's going to be a tweet that, you know,
right.
just Some rocks craziness. The world and right
yeah,
turns everything on its head. So, okay, so we've done with stable. Now let's do crazy. what is your assessment of the Republican narrative, not since January 6th, going back that far, but since last week, the end of last week, where it seemed to me that they'd had enough conversations amongst themselves that they kind of figured, you know, if we just soft pedal this a little bit, and you know, we're looking at some poll numbers that are saying that 72% of our base is with us, you know, still with Trump. We don't have to go out on this limb on impeachment. We don't have to go out on this limb in trying to convict the president.
I
think that's not only is it a dangerous game, it's just it is a foolish political game. It is a total not reading the American room right now, where the American people are.
Completely agree. They, you know, these guys, they're whispering quite like, well, he'll just walk away if we don't, but let's not make him angry. Hey, did that ever work in the last 4 years? You fucking no. assholes. It never worked. You idiots. It never worked. They never, every time they tried to throw Trump a bone, you know, it's like, these are the people throwing an alligator pieces of fried chicken. And the alligator keeps coming closer. When you run out of fried chicken, he's going to eat you. And
because you start to smell and look like the chicken.
Yeah, you look like bait at that point. And these people don't understand that Trump, the more you feed him, the more he's going to do this. And he's going to get closer and closer. And if you don't take him out of contention for 2022, or 24, excuse me,
right.
he's going to suck down money. He's going to still be the centerpiece of the party. He's going to be all they talk about. He's going to be a dying political brand for the rest of America. But for the Trump base, they're going to be begging for his return. It's going to make it harder and harder. It's going to make it harder for Mitch McConnell to capture the majority. It's going to make it impossible for Kevin McCarthy, that dummy, to.
What the hell was that all about? I mean, we had to be polite on television, but it wasn't kissing the ring. It was kissing the ass.
That was a lap dance. I mean, he was down there. He was down there to go in the champagne room with Donald. And it was a lot. It was a lot of a lot. And I got to say.
Did he go down to apologize? I mean, there were reports where he went down to apologize and to make up. For what?
Right. I'm like, what? He's like, mad at Liz Cheney. Is Trump's mad at Liz Cheney? Okay. Well, that's why he sent his little poodle Matt Gaetz out to Wyoming yesterday wearing a suit that looked like it was a child's cut.
I know. I know. Or at least a throwback to the 1980s.
All I could think of was my old boss, Dick Cheney. All I could think of was if somebody said Matt Gaetz is coming after today, he'd look up and do that thing over his glass and go, who? It's like this trifling little widget is but out,
you
know, there.
You actually kind of raise an interesting sidebar question.
Yeah.
Would Matt Gaetz have made that trip if and I get why the vice president is not kind of played in this space, because it is so beneath him to do so. But I wonder if he had just kind of put a marker out there on the streets, like, you going to come fuck with my daughter? Seriously? You going to do that?
I went to work for him in 1989. Okay. Right after Bush won. Worked at the Pentagon for 4 years. Known the vice president a long time.
Uh-huh.
He's an older guy with a heart problem. I still wouldn't fuck with him.
No.
He's tough. He's tough.
He is.
And I got to tell you, Liz Cheney is cut from the same cloth.
She is. And I don't think people understand that.
No. And she will not put up with the trifling shit of a guy like Matt Gaetz. Or you know, if the conference votes her out, I think it's going to tell people an awful lot. About where that party's headed.
Yep.
And none of it good. None of it good. So.
I've been trying to figure out, the last few days, exactly what that's going to look like and feel like potentially if next week they do vote her out. I think it's one of many of the last nails in the coffin of the party in some respects, because basically it's what it said, that we do not want to be led by reasonable, smart people who can actually win elections.
Right.
We just want to stay out in the cow patch and throw shit on each other.
Yeah, and it's going to be, it's going to be a moment where, as the electoral losses mount out in the states,
yeah,
and as they start to lose power out in the states, and look, the Republicans have lost 700 seats outside of D.C. from county commissioners to state House members to state Senate members to countywide officials under Trump.
We gained
from the time you were chairman to Obama, or to the end of Obama, we gained almost 2,000 seats in the country.
Yeah.
You started the ball rolling, and then it just built and built. And now we're on the downslope. And these guys are going to be in the reddest of red districts, and the craziness will increase, because you'll have Trumpers primarying Trumpers, and they'll try to out-Trump the Trumpiest Trumper.
Right.
So,
And on top of that, as they're trying to out-Trump each other inside Republican primaries, going after the likes of a Liz Cheney and a Rob Portman, who just said, "Screw it, I'm out of here."
Right. Right.
You still have, just in the last 3 weeks, 30,000 Republicans across the country have left the party.
Yep.
I'm not good at math, but I can do averages okay. And
yeah,
that,
yeah.
10,000 people each week going, hell no, I'm out of here. That kind of adds up pretty quickly in some real congressional districts where the margins can't afford to have 1,000 or 800 people.
No, you cannot.
Something else.
It's going to be that game of small numbers starts to get smaller and smaller everywhere outside of the, like I said, the deepest red areas. And when it gets to the point where you can't win in the suburbs, and you can't win in the cities, and you can't win in parts of the exurbs, and you're a party of rural 55 plus non-college educated white dudes, tell me where you go.
Where you go?
Tell me where you have a national movement. Tell me where you win big elections in swing states.
So that then triggers in my head the song from The Sound of Music that the sisters, the nuns sing, "What do you do with a problem like Maria?" In this case, we're going to do the remix, and it's, "What do you do with a problem like Marjorie, like Gaetz, like Matt, right, like Boebert?" Because quite honestly, the Republican leadership a la McCarthy, because in the Senate, he, you know, McConnell's like, that's your problem over there. I ain't got that level of crazy over here yet. But right. in the House, for sure, that's good. That actually, I think McConnell's got to be a little bit smart about this. That drives that momentum with that base. Yep. Those folks are closer to the ground where every day people who identify themselves as Trumpers or whatever are. What does the party do with them? My suggestion is, you know, with a Matt Gaetz, smack the shit out of him, put him out. Same thing with Marjorie Boebert. These people need to go. But there doesn't seemingly seem to be a will to do that. So what do? So they just capitulate to them.
I mean, we are coming closer and closer, I think, to the schism, where this may be, you know, there was a poll out today about 57% of Republicans think a Trump party would be better than the GOP. And there's a part of me that says, fuck it, let him go.
Yeah.
it'll be ugly for a while. It'll be painful for a while. The Democrats will outrun their coverage.
Yes.
I think making a center-right party more viable over time.
Yep.
But I think the Trump party is well outside the mainstream in terms of everything, in terms of you know, politics, in terms of policy.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They have no policy. They're just sure. Trump, you know. But I think they would win a lot of elections in some red places, but they are basically the Whig Party now.
Yeah,
the Republicans are basically the Whig Party. They voted for the Kansas-Nebraska Act and extended slavery to the West, and it killed their party. And they hung on for a little while longer, but it just started to slowly grind and grind it down and turn them into an irrelevance in the space, which led to the to the Republican Party. And I've told my Democrat friends this a lot. You know, the country is not as woke as you think it is.
No, it's not.
You get outside
of them that, please.
You get outside about 30 miles from the wealthy coastal cities, and it is not as well. It's not as woke and not as blue and not as progressive as you think. You know, you get away from
hell. I could bring you to some parts here in Prince George's County, Maryland.
I was just gonna say. You get away from D.C. on the Eastern Shore, 30 miles down there, and it's Alabama with better crabs. You know?
It's so true, though. But the crabs are still good, baby. But I think it's important for people to understand, you know, really the dynamics of the country. And as I tell people when I say, well, you know, we really are a center-right nation, like, oh, no, we're not. I'm like, okay, I tell you what. Don't look at the map of the states. Go look at a map of the counties.
Yep.
And see the red-blue alignment of the map of the counties.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll begin to see just how center-right the country really is across the board. I mean, it is an astounding reality. And you know, a lot of folks talk about the 18 election and the fact that, oh, the Democrats picked up all the seats. And then they scratch their head and they, you know, well, in 2020, yeah, they lost those 14 seats, but, you know, it had nothing to do with us. I'm like, it had everything to do with you. It had everything
all
to do with
it.
The fact, all of it. It wasn't those seats didn't flip back to Republicans because of Trump. They flipped back to Republicans because they were scared of the shit that was coming out of your mouth about, you know, the environment. Police, law and order. I mean, understand your audience, folks.
Well, you know what, Michael? I had a great story. I was talking to a young woman who was a progressive organizer working in Georgia. And she came down there from from a northeastern state.
Right.
And she said, you know, I've been doing field organizing for 4 years now, and I think I'm good at it. She goes, but I did not understand these black church ladies.
Oh, geez.
And I said, well, tell me what you mean. She goes, well, they're all Democrats, but they're I'm like, they're not progressives, are they? She goes, no. I'm like, ah, you've had a moment of revelation that not everywhere looks like the Northeast or California. And you know, it is the party that builds out from whatever is left after the Trump world. You know, it's not going to be our old Republican Party.
No, it's not.
It's not going to be the old, you know, the old party of our youth.
Yeah.
But I think a smart center right party that gets a lot out of the business of the social engineering stuff, gets into the business of making people across the board prosperous.
Yeah.
Maximizes individual freedom and liberty, runs the government in a way that is responsible and controlled. I think there's a huge market for that.
I do too. And, you know, look, there are a number of us inside and outside of the GOP who are trying to make that happen in some form. To your point, recognizing that it's not going to be easy. It's going to take time, but you've got to start that process. You've got to make that case, and you have to show with clarity the reason why what you and I believe and have fought for in the political space as a Republican has value even beyond that label, and is important beyond that label. So I can put any other label you want on it, but the value, the principles are the same. And you know, whether you call it Republican or whether you call it center right, whether you call it whatever, as long as those sort of Lincoln-esque values are the same about individual liberties and freedoms and, you know, limited government, all that stuff that you know, churns for us, I think that's that, to your point, it's going to be the sweet spot, man. And I hear it. I know you hear it from people who just say, you know, pull the trigger, I'm there. You know, let me know. They're pining for it. They really are pining for it.
I agree.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're talking to my man, Rick Wilson. He is published. He is well regarded across the spectrum. And we're going to come back with more conversation with Rick right after this.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. So we've got Rick Wilson in the house, and having Rick Wilson in the house is like, it is, you hear that phrase, bringing a bull into a china shop. It ain't nowhere near that with Rick. You are so well beyond the bull in the china shop. You have over the last...
The bull sees the china shop when I approach.
Yeah, that's right. The bull is like, oh, hell no, I ain't going up in there with him. No, that ain't happening. But there's a reason for that. You have managed to those of us who've worked with you in the past have always known this about you. You don't suffer fools. You don't give quarter, and you take the ground. That's why you were successful. You take the ground, and so you've brought that philosophy to the Lincoln Project. And it is interesting the way people, particularly our friends on the left, have just kind of like, thank God, you guys are here. How has that experience been in terms of resetting the chessboard of our politics and not letting the king, or in this, because we know the biggest player on the chessboard is really the queen, not letting the queen just run amok, but actually, while you're trying to box the king, you're also boxing the queen, right? You're boxing that player that can do the most damage to the game. And in this case, I, just so for clarity, in the analogy, the queen is Trump, and the king is the party.
Yeah, actually, it is. And you know, if we take Trump off the board, whether it's through impeachment or through seeing two seeing that people understand the legal and financial jeopardy he's in, or whether it diminishes his political standing or ability. There are a lot of ways to get there. But if you remove Trump from the equation, or make him, or reverse the polarity of the value he has to Republicans right now, mm-hmm. you start to leave the party in a position where it has to look in the mirror. It has to decide what to do. It has to figure out a pathway that is not as straightforward and easy and clear cut,
right,
as it would have been if you had Trump staying in power. You want to confuse their options a little bit. You want to force them onto a ground where they don't have the Death Star hovering out there of Donald mm-hmm. Trump. Mm-hmm. And it also, that also begins to break the primary crazy cycle. Because right now we're on a hamster wheel of crazy.
Right. And
so you get Marjorie Taylor Greene's because the party rewards crazy conspiracy theorists. You get Orrin Boebert's because the party rewards crazy conspiracy theorists. They are the ones who do better on Fox. They get more social media traffic. Don Jr. retweets them and endorses them. All that right. shit. And so, you know, you're going to get more crazy if you pay for more crazy.
You, the project has, you know, was very effective, and it was an honor for me to be a part of the effort during the campaign to bring clarity to the moment, to sort of help people sort of get the fog out of their eyes over the last 5 years, and just really kind of expose some truths. Trump's now off the stage. You've got a new set of players who are trying to emerge, who are wannabes, thinking that they can assume that mantle, or would like to assume it and recreate it in their image in some fashion or other. But the Lincoln Project, as a lot of reporting has been showing, is not going to sit idly by and allow that to happen.
No.
There are stories now that says, you know, hey, Cruz, Hawley, go down the list. You're in the crosshairs. What does that look like over the next 18 months going into 2022? And how can we participate?
Well, look, the corporate pressure campaign we're running is already pulling money out of the coffers of the traditional Republican donor class.
Right.
They do not want to be associated with these guys. They don't want to be, if you're General Electric or Boeing,
John Deere or something,
John Deere or Walmart or Microsoft, you don't want to be funding a pro-sedition, pro-insurrection, pro-treason party that tried to disenfranchise millions of African-American voters. It's a bad branding move. It's just it's a seriously bad branding move. Nobody wakes up and goes, hey, we should be branding our company with the pro-sedition guys, with the violent, crazy people who carry Confederate flags into the U.S. Capitol while they kill cops. Yay! Nobody says that. And so this idea that we're going to have a pathway that is blocked off for them financially is going to make their elections harder. It will make it harder and more painful for their behavior to continue. Mm-hmm. We're going to go after a few of these people, not only in the Senate. Again, we've got four scalps on the wall from the Senate the last year. Mm-hmm. We'll take a few more if need be to continue to teach the lesson, especially Josh Hawley, who should be expelled.
Yeah,
if you don't go out there and raise the power fist right. to the crowd of angry mobsters who are about to storm the building, and act like that's a great thing. And I've noticed like that he's so educated, but he's such a weasel. And he's like, oh, well, I was careful in my wording not to exceed the I mean, he knows how busted he is. He knows it.
He does. And he does.
If the guy actually lived in Missouri, he wouldn't sleep well at night. He lives in Virginia. He doesn't live in Missouri.
Right.
He uses his sister's home address in Missouri as his permanent address.
Does he really now?
Yep. He doesn't have a single piece of property in Missouri. He lives in Northern Virginia. He lives out in McLean.
So, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, yeah, Josh. Yeah, baby.
But yeah, he's got a lot of problems. And so we're going to press on a lot of the people that were in the Sedition Caucus. We're now about to launch some ads about Rick Scott, who's running the NRSC this time.
Yeah, no, yeah.
And those ads are going to be airing in New York on CNBC and on the Fox Business Channel and on Bloomberg, where corporate America is going to see them. And they're going to say, oh, shit, that guy's coming to ask us for $1 million, $500,000, whatever. They're going to say, oh, no, we can't deal with that guy. He was one of the sedition caucus. So we're going to hurt them as much as we can in that space because it's what they care about. It makes the campaigns much harder if they can't go and get the committees funded with some big whacks of cash from the corporate community.
You had mentioned on a Texas podcast, Y'all Ticks.
Yep.
That even the likes of a Ted Cruz is in that space. So there is no quarter spared to any of the insurrectionists or sedition caucus members who played a role here. How do you impact the House? Because that's a seabed of crazy that, I mean, look, I tried to manage as much of that as I could as chairman. I mean, look, we had some folks who were, got through primaries, but it just, you know, you can only do with so much. You only have so many fingers when you're trying to close the dike. But
yeah, you know, I can't boil the ocean, but what I can do is try to raise the price of being a QAnoner. Raise the price politically of being a conspiracy nut. And we'll play in a few races, and we'll play in a few of the races the Democrats should have won this last time. And in places where the Republicans are almost certainly going to nominate lunatics because that's where the opportunity space is for Democratic House members to recapture some of that territory they lost this last cycle.
So before I let you jump, to go do that thing that you do so well. What would you say? What are you saying now to the American people? And in particular, those, look, we talked about some of the hotheads in the Republican Party and the harm that they have caused to a lot of Americans. A lot of Americans are dead because of their stupidity and their laziness and their inability to just lead in the moment. After all of the noise and the TV ads and really kind of pushing the edge of that envelope, when you sit back and you kind of assess the last year and you certainly look at the last 2 months of this, What are you saying to the American people now? How do you get them to understand and appreciate the first part of our conversation where we were talking about our need to really kind of come together and to unify and to recognize that what Trump did was did his best to slit the wrist of America.
He really stopped them. He really did. And it's going to be hard because look, Trump was a political problem, but Trumpism is a cultural problem, and a civics problem, and a emotional problem. And how we deal with Trumpism is something that the Lincoln Project and others are still trying to wind their way through.
Right.
Because it's going to be difficult to get the party back on track and the country back on track if you've got a radicalized faction like the Trump movement right as it is today. So that's a longer journey, Michael. It's not just going to be winning elections. It's also going to be getting them out of that weird information vacuum that they're in with Fox and Facebook. It's going to be recruiting great candidates from the left, right, and center who work in various districts and beating the QAnon people. It's about raising the political cost of being a crazy person. And so it's going to be a very long journey. It's a longer battle than we anticipated going for at the front end. Because, you know, I went to sleep on election night and I said, okay, we're in the red mirage. Fundamentals are still good. Joe Biden's still going to win. And 3 days later, we pretty much had it in the can. It was done.
Right.
But that interval, I thought a lot about the fact that 70 million people still came out to vote for Trump after 350,000 dead people at that time. After all the other factors, it's like, we have a bigger fish to fry here than just a political problem. This is a much bigger problem than just politics.
Yeah. No, it is. And I think, you know, that kind of insight and voice in that part of the conversation is going to be important. You know, you can't just write off 74 million people. And you got to get it. You got to get behind. Look, I know probably a third of them they're gone. You know, they're the guy in the raccoon hat and the Chewbacca outfit. I think is what you call. They're gone. But the rest now are kind of like, oh my God, reassessing. You know, I really do want to go. You heard that from even some of the people who participated in the incursion. I didn't think it would go that far. Oh my God, you know, that's not what we thought would happen or we intended. So you know that there is that element of
there's buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
In this thing, and it's going to be out there for a while. It's going to be out there for a long while. And I don't think we can push them to it. We can help pull them to it, but we can't push them to it.
Yeah.
But it's also going to have a lot's going to depend on what happens to Trump legally, financially, etc. So,
well, I know Lincoln Project may have something to say about that. So
we might have a thing or two. So
a thing or two. He is Rick Wilson, longtime Republican political strategist, infamous ad maker and commentator. Catch him on MSNBC, where we get to hang out every once in a while with Brian Williams, which is a lot of fun when we're on together.
Love that show.
It's a nice uptick. We have a lot of fun.
He and Nicole are my favorites. I love them to death. So
it's good stuff. Rick, thanks so much for dropping back.
You bet, Mike. Have a great weekend, brother.
Take care of yourself, my friend. That'll do it for this while, folks. You know how I feel about the download thing. Do it whenever you can, because it makes me feel oh so yummy. You know, follow me and get download on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever you get that podcast thing on. And certainly follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. Check out the website, Michael Steele Network, www.michaelsteelenetwork. And I'll see you guys next week. And you know what I'm going to say right now. You know exactly what I'm going to say. Take care of yourself, be safe, and wear the damn mask.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.